Nemo Podcast 13.2. If this game was a Baha Men song, it would be Who Flattened the Dogs Out? All right, so we have a rookie mistake on the podcast this week.
Just one?
Well, you just heard it. Seth blew his voice out, despite the fact that he is a podcaster. That is part of his job title, podcaster.
I may not have gone to live sports very much in the last couple of years and forgot how to do it. And, like, I think my vocal, because I didn't feel like
now
I was screaming
like
that
Johansson.
Loud.
It's really a problem for me.
Well, I don't look like Scarlett Johansson. You're looking at me, so I'm sure the connection is not going to be made the entire time. But yes, I was a little... you wrote last week how, like, touched you were being in the stadium again. Like, you were not expecting the feels. And I was not expecting the feels because this is my first game back.
Sure. And I actually had totally different... Like, so last week, the stadium experience was like, oh, yes, I remember this and I love it. And, like, this week's experience was like... Not that
it was. I mean, there were a couple fans around me that I wish weren't around me.
Oh my God.
But other than that,
I may have had the worst fan I've ever been around.
Did they not like Giles Jackson? Because mine really didn't like Giles Jackson.
So one, yes, that. Two, whenever anyone was hurt, he was like, "Rub some dirt on it, boo!" Which is like. One of the worst things you can possibly do.
Yeah. We're a pretty good fan base about that, though. Like,
and then he was so excited about Mr. Brightside that he basically scream-yelled the whole thing. He's not singing. He's just belting it out like this is some sort of hymnal.
I would not have guessed that because I thought most of the fans that really like the new traditions are like younger fans, like the new traditions all kind of came around the same period.
And there's like wait I'm not done here.
Okay, go ahead.
Like there's belting it out, right?
Yeah.
Then there's like singing a song just as loud as you can possibly sing it because you're really into it. And then there's three levels of increasingly insane stuff. And then there's what this guy was doing.
So he's like raw taking this thing. And she's calling the cab.
It was so bad. It was so bad. And you know, I think I've mentioned this before. There's a problem in my section where all the IMG tickets are directly in front of our seats.
Right. Right.
So nobody there knows how to act.
Right.
And so they stand, like, for a big game, like, stand on the benches for a long period of time. In Ohio State games, this can be over a quarter.
Right.
And so if I stand on the benches, everybody else behind me who knows how to act is like, hey, don't stand on the benches. And if I don't stand on the benches, then I can't see the game.
Right.
And then if I yell at everybody to get off the benches, they think I'm a dick, and they don't get off the benches. So it's just... half of the first quarter, I had to like get up on the bench and then hunch down so I could see most of the game through someone's like window between heads.
Okay.
And that just always puts me in like a mood, right? It's
right.
Just like, so I was primed, and then the guys in front of us, like you could just smell the alcohol wafting off of them.
Well, I mean, on night game, there's plenty of time to put that in there.
And it didn't dissipate through the whole game, and you're like, how are you still this drunk? That's not natural.
All right, so I had a slightly different experience. Like, first of all, I've noticed now that the students who are like students during from like the Denard era on when these new traditions were made, right? Like when they started doing the hockey chants and everything like that, like when that became Michigan Football Stadium tradition, are now alumni and sitting in alumni sections. And so we've got a lot more people like doing the dance and like know exactly what they're doing. They know the words to Mr. Brightside. They're not belting it out at like, you know, three levels past insane, but they are singing Mr. Brightside, and it's like a better experience. I think that like that
should have taped it. You literally could not believe what this sounded like. It was
Hi, Mr. Brock. I can't. I really should not be doing that right now.
It was like if Brock Lesnar had been assaulted by a sword, and then all of the audio was coming out through like some sort of sword stoma in his neck, and that's not even. I can't do it.
Are we gonna find a metal cover of Mr. Brightside and put it on the podcast? Because if one's out there, it's definitely gonna be bumper music.
No.
Just warning everyone right now, if it's out there.
Like, no, I need the antidote. I need a ukulele cover of Mr. Brightside that can go on the podcast.
We could find that.
I suppose we should actually talk about the football game.
Well,
but before that, I have been gestured to. We're going to talk about our sponsors. The MGO podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic problems, including hockey jerseys. Check it out at ugpmichiganapparel.com. We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, and the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentleman Coders, SignalWire, and Prentice4M. And we had a discussion about this. We are at 4M right now.
Yes.
You've been given permission to call them 4M.
Not just permission. They changed the whole thing.
Okay. They might want to change it back because before it was pronounced Forum.
Yeah.
And what am I thinking right now about an NIL deal?
4M?
Hi, I'm Blake Corum.
From Forum. I mean, if you say I am Blake Corum, I'm already buying, so I don't even care what's going on afterwards.
Well, keep it in mind.
Yes.
Keep it in mind. We'll pronounce it however people want it to be pronounced.
Why don't we just call him Blake Corum?
That's not how it works. Okay. You just don't get to rename people for, like, corporation's sakes yet. I mean, not, like, yet in a cyberpunk.
I hate calling out my friend here, but Grapentine renamed one of their linebackers for a half. I was a little disappointed in Carl. It was like the first time I've ever heard him do that.
Come on.
First time ever.
Stop.
He stripped.
Stop. I will hear no Carl Grapentine slander.
Fair enough.
Anyway, Michigan defeats Washington by a score of 31-10.
Do you remember what I predicted it would be? I said 33-11, and you were like, whoa. And Sam Webb had the same response when I said that.
Well, you know, I think I did the preview for this game.
Uh-huh.
And I read Alex's post, and I kind of watched the game that they played, and I was just like, you know, some FCS upsets are like, oh, there's just a bunch of turnovers or like some explosive plays, and this feels like, you know, it could be a fluke. And you watch Washington play, and you're like, no, this team is bad.
Yeah. I mean, the only question was, is Montana good? And there's still an FCS team with a pop gun quarterback.
Well, let's start off with the offense.
Okay.
And we're going to start off with the good part of the offense, which was, you know, Jimmy Lake was a defensive coordinator before he got the boost. It looked like Washington had, I mean, they definitely had some Polynesian dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked like they were going to be a functional Power 5 defense.
Right.
And Michigan paved them. Like, I don't think I've seen them pave anyone at that level since the Notre Dame game a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So Tuli and Taki are both like 360 and 330-pound dudes. And we all agree Michigan should attack the edges because they're, you know, they had these rotating linebackers or outside linebackers, defensive ends, really.
Whatever.
Yeah. But they were moving Tuli and Taki, and Vestardis especially. Like, there were a couple times where he'd lose the fight initially and then all of a sudden get his legs under him, and just by the end, those guys just did not want any part of Michigan, and I don't think Washington wanted to use their backups.
No, and there's a certain genre of center block that I generally graded off as a +2,
mm-hmm.
where you get a big piece of a double, and then you come off and you pop someone. And if you look at a lot of Michigan's long runs, Vestardis is accomplishing that against some tough customers. So, you know, going into the season, I think people were a little bit worried because, as we mentioned on the season preview podcast, it kind of feels like maybe Michigan's absolute best case scenario line is having Zinter play center,
right,
bringing in another one of these guards that you have, and maybe Zinter isn't quite there yet from a Czech standpoint because center is a very difficult position to play mentally. And then so Vestardis is a walk-on, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we're going to be talking about Vestardis as Glasgow-esque.
Yeah, I've very much come around. And we had good reason, because last year, Best Artist didn't look very good, and he got replaced by Carpenter later in the year. Like, normally those things don't portend well. And then we were told by some people, okay, he was injured last year, don't really count that. But, I mean, he's moving people, he gets around people, so he's got that agility. He doesn't, like, he's not walk-on level athlete, right? It's not just being heady out there. He's pushing people, and, like, being able to move Tuli and Taki consistently, that's just a new level. That is, like, I mean, you're talking about, I don't want to mention Ruiz, but, like, you're talking about getting kinds of performances.
No, that's a level beyond what you're talking about, because he doesn't have that kind of mobility.
Right, but we're getting, I mean, I would put him up against most of, like, the Lloyd Carr centers.
Sure, and then also winning their battles inside are Michigan's guards, and they rotated because Zinter still has that club.
Right.
But so Keegan did work, Zinter did work, and Filianga did some work. And then Stuber was absolutely, like, mauling.
Yeah.
Like, that guy, whoever Stuber was going up against, like, sometimes he'd chip on a DT, but that was the biggest mismatch of the day. And I don't think it was a coincidence that a lot of those runs went over Stuber.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, so the last game, we didn't see Stuber very much. Like, he was not doing a whole lot. And I think this game, the first play, I think they pulled him. And that block went really well. And then afterwards, they were just running off of him. So I don't know if, like, he was being saved. But they definitely had a lot of they would have misdirection just to kind of get the linebacker stepping the wrong way. And I thought they had a lot of guys crossing each other. And then basically Stuber would blow somebody out. Often one of those two defensive tackles. Yeah. Sometimes he was blowing them out so well that even if other blocks didn't go well, like at one point I think they had Wilson try to kick somebody out, and he just completely whiffs. And then there's time even after he does that, because the block has gone so well, for Hassan's to kind of reset and then go inside of that block anyway.
So I couldn't figure this out in my brief rewatch, because this is something that I have to look at a lot to figure this out. But it felt like there were a lot of design cutbacks. So you get that pulling action, and then you saw Corum in particular pop out of the backside away from the pulling action quite a lot. Usually not something that a running back in a gap blocked play is supposed to do, to even be looking for. And I'm not going to put it past Blake Corum to have that kind of Mike Hart stuff going on. But to me, the consistency with which they were doing that meant that that was part of the game plan. And so you might look at that and be like, okay, there's just one thing that's going on here. And I think that there might be some real subtle differences in what Michigan is doing to pop those guys out of the backside of the play. But that's something that I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, and you can speak to this too. UFR, like, run plays take a lot longer, I think, figure out.
So there's, like, the dichotomy of the run play where it's like, okay, the clock's going to run after this, so there aren't going to be 100 plays in this game.
Right.
But, yeah, run play versus a pass play, especially the way I grade where it's just like the offensive line as a whole kind of gets a check mark if the quarterback's clean.
Right. and then you just got to figure out how good the throw was.
Yeah. But anyway, so we should probably talk about the running backs. I mean, obviously Blake Corum. Is this crazy to say? Is that when Blake Corum popped into the open field against that safety and dusted him, that felt like Denard Robinson?
I mean,
because Blake Corum, slowed down at the 10-yard line.
Yeah.
And everybody else was like, yep, this is a touchdown. And as soon as he broke through the line, and as soon as I saw that safety angle, I'm like, six.
Yeah.
And I felt like...
Well, and the safety is like taking steps like, I've got this. Wait a minute. Oh, no.
Right.
Yeah. And then like that last step where he like almost like blows his knee out because he's like, this is my last chance. That reminded me of Denard. And like, I mean...
Who is the safety? The Iowa safety?
I don't remember his name. White Iowa safety, you know, number 24, right?
Guy, like, does everything right in his whole life, and then he comes up against Denard Robinson, and he's just holding his intestines in afterwards. That's what that felt like.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, we have been hyping up as Mike Hart, but fast, but, oh, man. That guy's going to play in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio State wanted him, and he reminds me of the backs that Ohio State's had come through, like Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, we haven't seen him block yet, but the kind of cuts that he makes.
Who's their most recent one? The small guy who is J.K. Dobbins.
J.K. Dobbins, yeah.
He reminds me of J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah.
But then there was a run, I think in the third or fourth quarter, where he like hopped over two gaps on a jump cut, and
uh-huh.
It was like, one, to see that, and two, to be able to do that at that angle, at that quickly, that is Mike Hart right there. That was something that he was able to do. And I don't remember being this hyped about a Michigan running back, because, I mean, we have the controversial UFR scores. I'm like, this guy. And
yeah, you were like ripping me, like, that's too high. Plus 16.5, you're too nice to these guys.
It is probably – we just grade differently.
Yeah, that's fair. But, like, it felt – when I was done with that, the offensive line score and the running back score were, like, matched. So whatever my grading level is, it felt like those two were basically the same, and that felt right at the end of it. And then I kind of felt that way this game too.
You know, we talk about Corum because Corum is just the guy with the incredible upside. Hassan Haskins also did a bunch of work in this game. You know, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that like that guy has taken half the carries, and that's like not a bad idea.
Yeah,
like he also has excellent vision. He doesn't have that quite jitterbug stuff, but also he lowers the boom in a way that Corum doesn't. And you mentioned the safety on that touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how much of that lack of caution was because he had to come up and tackle Haskins.
Yeah.
And so you're coming up and tackling Haskins and you're like, all right, this guy isn't going to run around me. What he is going to do is he's going to lower the boom and mm-hmm. try to run me over. So what I need to do is I need to come up and match his momentum.
Right.
So he was coming up way too fast for Blake Corum because maybe he's doing Haskins
stuff. Yeah.
And so that ability to do the thunder and lightning stuff that people always talk about, I think that's a real example of why that's a valuable thing.
So one of the things the old guys, several of them mentioned it to me, is that the thunder lightning thing is not just like a fan. You know, it's not just like some trope, right? That the reality of it is that when you're trying to tackle a thunder all the time, it really just physically wears you out. And, like, having to take down Hassan Haskins and, like, the physical amount of effort that you put in every single time, you just getting hit itself takes it out of you. And then, like, when you're trying to get a guy like Corum, you need that extra juice to, like, get the rap in. And, like, it's really hard, to, not just mindset-wise, but physically, to have both of those going on at the same time. So, like, you get run over by Haskins a few times, or just trying to pull that guy down, and then you get Corum next, and you just don't have the juice.
Yeah, so... And the thing about this game is, so the Notre Dame game that I referenced, mm-hmm. that was the most recent extreme paving of a pretty decent opponent, you know, that was a lot of misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was the big run for, I think, Charbonnet, where they flipped it out, they pretended to flip it out in the flat to St. Russell and took a lot of attention away, and then they went the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a trap that they hadn't seen before, and so Notre Dame's linebackers flew over the top, that kind of stuff. This was not that. You know, this was not putting guys in wrong gaps and, you know, having like some sort of horrible wizardry that gets you big chunks. That's a lot of how you score in the first half. Now, there was some of that. I'm not saying there wasn't any of that. But the sheer down to down where like Michigan runs and if they don't get 5 yards, you're a little surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think – I can't remember the last time like that was the case. Where instead of like, you know, drips and drabs and then you get some big plays and you get a lot of big plays because Harbaugh's pretty good at scheming that stuff up, you just have this down to down where, like, I mean, how many 2 yard runs did Michigan have?
But, well, there were a few, but the 2 yard runs were like when they actually got caught.
Right. I mean, yeah. There were a few, right.
Yeah.
But like,
but most of them were like 5 or 6 or four. Yeah.
Anything 3 or shorter, it feels like that might have been like 15-20% of the runs, and that's unheard of, really.
Yeah. I mean, it got to the point where, you're right, they were just mauling guys. And it was just like pushing guys off the ball and then running their stuff. There was a lot of misdirection at the beginning. I also noticed they were checking those safeties all the time. Like, the Washington safeties would be, usually they were just staying high, right? And then they would flip and they go to like a one high look. But those safeties weren't really coming down. like you would expect after you've been run on, you know, 30 times in a row, and like the fans are literally yelling at you, we're running, guys, we're running, we're going to run left. And they weren't bringing their safeties down. And like, it made, as long as they weren't going to do that, it was almost like they were playing chicken. Like, Washington's like, okay, you got to pass now against our great pass defense. And Michigan's like, no, we don't.
So I think we've been effusive enough about the ground game that we should pivot to the kind of more concerning half of the offense.
Oh, there was a passing game.
So can I
tell you something that happened first? Like, one of those footballs got loose in the stands, and like, you know, people were throwing around, and it got to me, and I saw that the the guy in charge, the aisle, what do they call him?
Usher
was coming over, like, very seriously wanting to get it from me. So I just did, like, what do I do? I don't know how to pass. And I just handed it off to him. That was the Michigan response.
Well, as metaphors go, that's pretty good. So the pro position here is that Michigan was playing a very bad offense.
Uh-huh.
And they were just paving these guys on the ground, so the way to lose this game was to, like, have something unusual happen. You know, mm-hmm. The whole, like, you know, three things can happen when you pass, and two of them are bad.
Very. I mean, we're literally bringing out the greatest hits from the 70s.
Well, I mean, that's right. Like,
but yeah, when you have 44 yards of passing,
and
it's
so,
like,
and
yeah.
So there is that mentality, and you know, I can see that argument, but also I kind of feel like if it's 3rd and 10, and you're running the ball, that doesn't make me feel great, no matter the context that this game is in,
yeah.
Except in some pretty extreme situations.
Did they run on 3rd and 10? I remember 3rd and 6 as they would run.
There were a lot of passing downs where they just
yeah.
didn't run the ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of feels like even if you were that, if you had that ability to just pave a team, that you would probably want to mix in some slants and some mm-hmm. easy throws to get the quarterback going. And Washington clearly had all the screen stuff downloaded because
yeah.
they were just overplaying that all day. So that's not on the table. So you have to go downfield a little bit. And, yeah, they got good corners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's going to be some sort of element of risk. But it did concern me that they seem to have very little faith in Cade McNamara.
Yeah, and Cade didn't do a whole lot. I don't know how he's going to come out in UFR because I wasn't able to kind of watch all the plays yet. But there were several third downs where I noticed he kind of locked onto his first read and stayed there until he was sure that read was covered. And by then, the second read had gotten open and then gotten closed again.
Yeah. So there were definitely a couple of things where he definitely came to the guy he should have come to late.
Yeah. And by that point, he was, like, either under, you know, getting sacked, or that guy, or like a linebacker had recovered and managed to get inside on the slant or something. And that was the problem. I mean, he did come back on the Cornelius Johnson throw, but that I'd love to see the all 22 and figure out where everybody was, because that almost felt like a panic throw that just worked out.
That felt intentional to me.
Yeah,
that
I mean, he was like, coming back for it, so
that felt like it. Johnson, I think, expected that to be a back shoulder just by his, like, that was a very smooth transition to, I got to stop. And so that felt like just a good throw to me.
But okay.
These things are always judgment calls.
Right.
but yeah, so I think some people took this criticism too far. Like, I tweeted a couple of things that were like, and I got some replies that are like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Get in J.J. McCarthy. And I was just like, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that, like, this doesn't make me feel great about what is going to happen when Michigan plays a defense that they can't pave.
So, I mean, Ronnie Bell's absence, I thought, was very felt.
Yeah.
Because, like, their favorite pass play was always running Ronnie on a crossing route. And I thought that they were having a hard time getting some of their receivers off the line. Roman Wilson, who's not a very good blocker to begin with, seems to get a little stuck on the line sometimes. I mean, he's just not learned that a whole bunch yet.
Yeah,
he was getting jammed up.
The fade that they threw to him, he did not get
yeah.
any separation. And, like, he's super fast, so
right.
why is he not getting separation? He can't get off the line.
Right, Right. And so, I mean, I don't know if now that you don't have Bell, maybe you try to run him in the slot or put him in motion or put him behind a guy or something like that. Do something to kind of use his speed a little bit more. There was not a whole lot of Henning in this game. I don't barely remember him. I think I remember him getting one of the screens, and that was
it. Yeah, one of the screens that got blown up.
Right. But there's another guy that you can kind of run across the formation and get something open with speed. I mean, I understand, like I said, the safeties are back, and they have great cornerbacks, and it's working. But, like, there were times when Michigan needed to pass, and it looked like it just was they didn't have it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see where it goes. It is possible that Michigan isn't really going to see a secondary like this in a long time, because they have a lot of legit players in that secondary. So, maybe it'll be a little easier, you know.
Yeah.
Can this edition of the offense beat Ohio State?
Maybe if Joe Moorhead is calling the plays.
I mean, I guess that's sort of an unfair thing to ask, because it's like, did I expect them to beat Ohio State going into
this? No.
Okay, so
yeah.
Can they beat Wisconsin? Oh, maybe.
Yeah, Wisconsin's, you know, got the same issues as that Washington has.
Yeah, and then Penn State, Michigan State, you know.
Yeah.
Newly resurgent Rutgers.
They're going to be spicy.
They're not going to be that spicy.
What about Maryland? Maryland crushed somebody. I can't even remember who they were playing.
Okay.
Okay, let's go to the next game.
I mean, Maryland used to start off seasons by beating Texas, and that didn't really help them.
That's why Texas went to the SEC, because they don't play Big Ten teams in the SEC.
It's just the stupidest thing imaginable if you're Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can't even win the Big 12. You can't even come close.
Right.
And you're in a BCS league.
Uh-huh.
You're in a completely unfair financial situation. You're always going to be Texas. And because you're losing some recruits to Ohio State, you panic and you're like, yeah, I want to be in there with Georgia and Alabama. You can't beat Iowa State. What are you doing?
There are some people in charge over
you
in
let
Texas.
Baylor become a national power.
There are some people in charge of Texas, and they want to be an SEC school. Like, they want to operate. They hired an SEC coach.
Ugh.
They want to be an SEC school, and like they keep on watching
stupid.
Texas A&M like take away recruits and like recruit better than
Texas
they can.
Texas A&M is gonna like go to the Outback Bowl until everyone dies.
Yeah,
they're never gonna do anything.
But Texas feels like they were kind of left like carrying they're Kansas football.
Texas A&M is like ranked 7th.
I'm not.
And they're gonna go 8-4.
I'm not making the argument myself. I'm telling you what the thought process is behind the idiots in charge of Texas,
yeah,
who've been in charge of Texas as long as, you know, since the Dave Brandon days. You remember, like, we were putting our stuff out there.
Stop. I have a segue.
Okay.
Speaking of idiots, on the other side of the break, we'll talk about John Donovan.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
If
you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit prentice4m.com.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next 5-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Coming out of my cage and I've been doing just fine. Gotta be down because I want it all. It started out with a kiss. How did it end up like this? It was only a kiss. It was only a kiss. Now I'm falling asleep and she's calling a cab while he's having a smoke and she's taking a drag. Now they're going to bed. My stomach is sick and it's all in my head, but she's touching his chest. Now he takes off her dress. Now let me go. I just can't look, it's killing me and taking control. Jealousy turning saints into the sea, swimming through sick lullabies, choking on your alibis. But it's just the price I pay. Destiny is calling me. Open up my eager eyes, 'cause I'm Mr. Brightside.
Here you go.
All right, before we get to the end of the other side of the ball, we should tell you we are recording this from Prentice 4M, where a bunch of sad-looking Husky fans are checking out. Sorry, guys. Prentice 4M just took over Lucky's and put a survey on our message board recently that you can take if you're interested in helping them shape what they're going to do with the space. I recommend doing that because I live nearby and will attend frequently. Unless you have different ideas than me, in which case, don't take the survey.
Yes.
But do take the survey.
Yeah. Well,
their success is important. Never mind. Take the survey.
Take the survey. Take you the can survey. Find our. It's on our message board. I think it's been pushed down now by the game threads, but like,
right.
It's on there.
It's 4th and 4.
Yeah.
You have 15 rushing yards. What are you calling?
Kill Hackenberg. Which play, I am sure, now I am now positive, is still in there.
It's 4th and 4 and you have 15 rushing yards. What are you doing?
Run at Aiden Hutchinson.
What are you doing?
They didn't read anybody off the edge. You want to? I mean, I was making fun of us for not reading off the edge. You see how many guys we're bringing in off the edge on those plays?
What are you even doing?
So this is why I predicted 33-11 for this game.
15 rushing yards.
John Donovan.
Do you know how many rushes you would have with 15 rushing yards to not expect to get it on 4th and 4? Four! 4 rushes!
Well, you know, it's the that 27-27 mindset. Was he fair? No, he wasn't there yet for that.
Oh, God.
John Donovan.
Oh, my God.
You hang around Penn State fans enough. It's like if you hang around Michigan fans enough, you learn the name Al Borges.
Anyway, so watching the Montana game, it was clear that this offense was bad.
Uh-huh.
And it continues to be bad to the point where, you know, honestly, after the first 2 drives, I'm like, we're shutting this team out. And we didn't. And I was like, oh, all right, fine. But I honestly don't know if we can take anything more from this game than we took from the Western Michigan game.
I'm pretty concerned about that. I mean, K. Dotton knocked a couple of our guys down, and that was like,
you know, he's a good guy.
Yeah, and like that guy's legit. But I mean, our defensive line was moving them, especially their left guard. I think anything up against him, I'm not even going to consider.
Well, yeah. So there is that. Is that Michigan's defensive tackles played Pac-12 offensive line, at least four of the five of them, and did very well. And then, you know, their left tackle is supposed to be like a
Jackson Kirkland, yeah. He's
supposed to be a potential first-round pick. And Aiden Hutchinson ate his lunch.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, physically, and like, got around, like, fast and just shoved him off the ball. He was, like, putting him in this quarterback's lap. And it was an all-night thing. It was just like, this guy cannot handle Aiden Hutchinson.
One of the things we talked about after the Western game was, you know, Hutchinson got subbed out a lot. They were doing a lot of rotation. And it didn't feel like he was a down-to-down problem.
Uh-huh.
No longer a concern. Clearly, just he rotated out a lot.
Yeah.
There were points where he rotated out in this game, and the defense felt different, and not in a good way.
which is a concern that there is such a big gap between Hutchinson and the other guys.
No, but there's always a like. Is there a big gap between Kayvon Thibodeau and whoever Oregon beat Ohio State with? Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a situation where there's always going to be a big gap when you have a guy who's like a top half of the NFL first round talent. So that's fine. You know, the other defensive line things is Mozzie Smith played a lot of snaps. And I think that's really important because, you know, his reputation, as soon as he showed up on campus, he's really good at for about 30 seconds.
Right. Right. Just as long as we kick him off the field in three downs, we're fine.
And after that, we have some problems. That seems like it's on the way to being fixed. And I think Mike Morris turned in another game where it's just like, okay, he's depth.
Yeah.
He's a guy who can come in, and you're like, all right, that's depth. Which is, God, if you listened to the season preview podcast, when we got to like, okay, who's behind the defensive tackles? Yeah. It was just a list of people nobody had ever heard of. You were saying the names, and I was like, I don't believe that's a person on the team.
Like the transfer from Brown. I mean, they were doing that to us, too. Like, how much I've not seen any of, like, Julius Welshoff was on the field a bunch, but I have not seen Spade a whole bunch, except for, like, in the very end of the game.
Spade got in LA a little bit.
Yeah, but like, that he's not a main rotation guy, and Chris Jenkins is, which is, I think, really good news because he's a guy that we thought would be maybe another year away before he like grows a big enough butt to be a defensive tackle.
Yeah, I think it depends on like how well he actually is doing. I think it's a good sign for Chris Jenkins personally.
Yeah,
but it's maybe not a good sign. Well, he was my sleeper of the year that year, so that's
no. I mean, no, but well. Washington caveats. You don't know how, you know, if it's going to matter again or if these guys are just terrible, but he was moving guys too.
Yeah, and then I don't think they got any of their injured wide receivers back in this game. They kept throwing to Taj Davis, who played in their opener, and they kept throwing to Giles Jackson, so I think they were still super depleted there.
Number 17, he was back.
Was he? So they got one guy back, but it was not a group that, and then the quarterback has such a noodle arm that, like, the things that I'm worried about, like, still Gray getting beat over the top, maybe Hawkins being center field, that kind of stuff, didn't really come up, especially because the quarterback doesn't have any time. So those, I think, are still open questions. you know, Turner played a little nickel corner in that, I guess it's a dime package, but in long yardage, they actually played Dax as a safety, and they had the three corner lineup, and I was impressed on a couple of those because he was able to. I think he got a pass breakup, and then there was another one where he was in the guy's pocket. So,
yeah, he got beat once too, and he also had the taunting penalty.
Okay,
but so like he's
like don't taunt, but
yeah, but like his negative. I'm saying like his positive and negatives might like even out just because there weren't a whole lot of opportunities, but like his negatives were like Hill Green, fixable things, as opposed to like I didn't see him getting beat by the receivers. I didn't see him like just getting toasted or something.
No, and I think that's a no-win situation. Really, you can either not get toasted by these receivers, and it's like all right, that doesn't really mean a whole lot,
right?
Or you can
Or you can get toasted by Ricky White.
Which that is actually a fair point. That is a fair point. Because if you don't remember the Michigan State game from last year because you wisely got too drunk to do so, he was the guy who had like 150 receiving yards on 8 targets, and he got like 2 targets the rest of the year.
Right, and is not playing this year.
So, yeah, not getting clowned by Ricky White. Never mind. I take all that back. Extremely valuable information. Thank you, Seth.
Speaking of not getting clowned by Ricky White, I thought Gray had another good game.
I'm still, I guess, reserving judgment. I'm still, like, I don't want to, like, dump on the guy, obviously.
But yeah.
I'm also, I don't want to get my hopes up, really, you know. It's a long way to come.
Yeah, I know, but, I mean, the like, JT Floyd turnaround. It starts with picking out some guys who are not great, and then, like, you know, I don't know. He's not going to get to the point where he's covering Chris Olave. It's just not happening.
Right, so, like, yeah. So... JT Floyd, I think, is the exact right person to bring up.
Yeah.
JT Floyd got a lot better, and also he topped out as the guy who the NFL just wasn't interested in.
And point. We saw it in the 2011 Ohio State game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, let's bring up more of those.
That was a fun win. That was a fun game. That was a beautiful. You cannot feel bad about the 2008 because you can just think about that guy being open and be like, well, Braxton Miller's throwing the ball. Anyway.
I mean, that is the one we won, yes. I just assumed it was a loss. For reasons that I think are very understandable. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then the linebacker level, you want to be excited about them in the run game. They do have a much easier job than previous editions of Michigan linebackers.
I mean,
because we're doing much more two gap, take on a double, keep your guys clean stuff.
This game more so. Yeah, I think Josh Ross had more on his plate last game because they were trying to do some of that 5-1 stuff. Mm-hmm. And this game, they were playing 2-man, still some coverage issues. I got to go back and look, but I think that there were a couple times where either one of them missed their chip on a guy coming across the middle, and I think we were saved just by pressure at one point. Ross, though, was activating a lot faster. He was not just waiting for something this time, and I thought he had an overall pretty good game.
Yeah. The interesting thing to me is Junior Colson is rotating in a fair bit.
Yeah.
And so Junior Colson is a true freshman,
mm-hmm.
and he got lined up, and he saw that Mozzie Smith was in the wrong spot, and he gave him a butt tap. And then Mozzie Smith shifted over, and I was like, that's not something you usually see from a true freshman.
Yeah.
So, and for him to just be on the field immediately is I think, a really good indication of where he is mentally.
And the speed shows you that, the upside is real on that guy.
Yeah, so, he's rated, I think, just outside the top 100 on the composite.
Something like that, yeah.
And so... a lot of that is physical attributes. What does he bring to the table physically? And if he's playing already, if he's correcting other people's mistakes, I think he might be pretty underrated. And Michigan is going to be real happy with him down the road.
Yeah. After Ross disappointed me so much last week, I was kind of already thinking is Junior Colson going to possibly pass this guy? But I'm there's no way. Because he's senior, whatever. But, Colson's going to be better than Ross. And, you remember seeing early Devin Bush. Don't want to necessarily make that comp.
Wait.
But, you saw very early that he was picking things up quickly, that you couldn't get things on him twice.
That is
he would have freshman mistakes. And I think that's where...
No, he wouldn't have freshman mistakes.
Yeah.
That was the thing about Bush. It's every linebacker makes mistakes.
Yeah.
I have never seen a linebacker enter the lineup like Devin Bush and know everything. And yeah, he made some mistakes, but his incredible lack of minuses through his career was special, and we'll see if that applies to Junior Colson as well. We haven't really mentioned Dax Hill because they didn't really do anything.
They tested the edge on Dax Hill once, and then what happened when you when you test Taxel happens, and that
was
it.
It feels very Peppers.
It is.
Because there was an era where like teams were like, we're going to throw to the wide side of the field on some sort of screen action. And they kept doing it, despite the fact that it was never going to work.
There's a reason why they do it. And it's because you see that guy coming in, right? And he's kind of almost in, it's almost in the box. And the only way to do something about that guy is to throw the ball outside and test him. But if you test him and it doesn't work, then you just kind of have to live with it. And no offensive coordinator really wants to live with it. Like, it's in everyone's playbook. So if you see that linebacker, there's some way to get rid of him.
Yeah. Well, do we have any more John Donovan slander? It's not slander, because it's all true.
It's very true.
It's all true.
There were so many times where I was just like, how do you not have a read? Or why are you putting Giles Jackson outside again? Michigan had Giles Jackson downloaded. Like, they knew they wanted to go outside with him. Every time they did, like, an end around, there were, like, three guys flying outside ready for it.
He did have that long catch over the middle, which I thought Washington probably should have been more aggressive with earlier in the game, because Michigan's linebackers, I'm not going to call them blitz ball, but they're more blitz ball than they were.
Yes.
So, especially with the assumption that this is going to be some sort of frippery to the outside, I thought they could have gone with that a little bit more, but, you know. John Donovan.
I think the box score is a big liar in this game, because they got a lot of yards throwing at the end of the first half.
Right. They had, like, I was like, this. They got it with like 12 seconds left, and like, we're gonna try a 12-second drive, and I'm like, and they didn't even throw a Hail Mary. They were just like, we're gonna pad our stats, guys.
Yeah.
This is a drive so that we can look at the halftime stats and be like, we're in this game.
Yep, and they did that with their touchdown drive, too, which they got over, you know, Rod Moore, who was in at safety. So, I mean, if Rod Moore is the guy in there, yeah, good for Rod Moore. It was not Michigan playing their starters at that point.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about game theory, special teams, possibly frippery. Maybe I'll complain about the other guy who was behind me a lot.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGO blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
I'm shining down on you, shining down on you. The cloud is moving nearer still. A aurora borealis comes in view. Aurora comes in view. So I ran so far.
Take so raw from you that it could be something related to John Donovan's body, which has no skin on it, and that's why he's such a bad offensive coordinator.
Ah! You were going to throw up there for a second.
Seth, give me your rawest take.
Michigan should run their punt fake play at the goal line.
which was just a dive, but yeah. If they just ran three dives behind Vastardis, they would have gotten in instead of being all frippery and trying to throw it.
Yeah, our offensive segment was fairly positive, so I forgot to complain.
Yeah,
about them throwing the ball on second and two from the two.
Yeah, when you're just dominating them up front.
I don't think second and two from the two is like ever a throwing down. Like you're on the two.
I mean, when you're throwing the ball like. Like Michigan does not throw. Why would you throw now?
Yeah. No, I just like there's a lot of upside to getting 1 yard.
Yeah.
On second and two, and there's not a lot of upside to getting. I don't know. It's whatever.
Yeah. So just run Michael Barrett out there. Put the whole punt unit out there and just be like, all right, we're diving.
Here we go. All right. My raw take is Sherrone Moore is probably all right.
So sure.
Warner guy, because I watched the worst blitz pickup line in Michigan history.
Uh-huh.
And then I watched one coached by Warner that was really good at it. So I'm like, I'm a Warner guy, and I was pretty sad that he left. But after this performance, you can't be like, you can't not give Sherrone Moore some credit.
Sure. Sure. I mean, Warner certainly worked with a lot of these guys, so we could also be on the Wile E. Coyote year for that. But some of the things that they were doing, especially the younger guys, like Keegan has really come forward, and just the confidence that they have in their line has to come from some of the...
Yeah, also when you work with tight ends and like...
Right.
You're acting in some capacity as an offensive line coach too.
And they coach together. Like the tight ends, half the time, they're going to be sitting with the offensive line practicing the same stuff.
All right, what can the people of MGO blog do to continue to get me to do this extremely degrading and terrible thing?
If you would like to have us continue doing this extremely degrading thing, check out the Raw Power app for iOS and Mac. It's an advanced photo editor and manager, and Raw Power is written by a Michigan alum. It's great with RAWs and JPEGs, works with their Apple library, and adds editing features no other app has. Raw Power is 20% off for the next week, so check it out at rawpower.app.
All right, special teams and game theory stuff. Michigan did try to punch it in from the one after the goal line issues that I mentioned. They failed. And then we almost saw the reason that even failing there is often a pretty good option, because Washington, they're backed up on their own one.
Yeah.
They get nothing on first down. They get nothing on second down. They get bailed out by a horrible roughing the passer penalty. And then, so if they're at 3rd and 10 on the one,
yeah,
you're going to get the ball back probably, what, their 30?
Yeah, if you don't block it, because by then their punter is so backed up, yeah, he can't actually, like, have his full distance to, you know, and you can actually, and their punter took a long time to get some punts off. So, I mean, that's a high risk of a block or anything, right?
Yeah, so I think the go for it in that situation is now the conventional wisdom. Like, when I started doing this, I had to yell about it a lot.
And uh-huh.
Everybody's like, yeah, this is what we do. But the ensuing possession there is a good piece of evidence as to why that's such a good.
Yeah, I actually pulled the EPA, the expected points added. So if you're 4th and 1 on the goal line and you get 0 yards, the difference is 3.1 something. Points, expected points. So it's really almost exactly the same as a field goal. But, you know, you're really doing nothing other than just giving yourself a chance to have a touchdown.
All right. The other sort of main event here was, as you mentioned, you're kind of stealing my thunder this whole segment.
Oh,
actually,
sorry.
I stole my thunder for part of the segment. We're stealing my thunder. We're collectively stealing my thunder. Was the fake punt. Everybody was pretty disappointed by the run call on, I think it was 3rd and 5. Was
uh-huh.
it 3rd and 6?
Yeah, I can't remember which one. I can't remember if it was 3rd and 5 or 3rd and 6, but it was probably...
So they
yeah.
run it, they get down to 4th and 1, they put the punt team out there, and then Barrett picks it up like he always does. And we've talked about how Michigan's sort of archaic punt approach is in part because they just have the spread punt downloaded, so mm-hmm. they don't want to run it. Obviously, why would you run something
right,
that I think has fatal protection flaws? But also something the coaches have mentioned is it's tough to run fakes out of that.
Yeah.
And it's not tough to run fakes out of the conventional formation for the obvious reasons.
Right, you have an up back.
Right, and Michigan's paid that off for, you know, a couple fake punts a year, I think, for the last few years.
And we also had the pass to Daxton.
Like, right. The crucial fake punt that saved our bacon against Army. You just can't talk about the recent history of Michigan football and
without,
not, like, just hit landmine after landmine.
There's a reason why that play worked, too, even if, you know, they think it's coming. Because, like, people are always yelling, fake, 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 on 4th and 1 punt.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just a wad of bodies and then the up back running with a good head of steam. So it's really no different than a dive play. And that was my, you know, hot take. Was that, you know, it's the same exact play. And it usually has that same result where you're just a wad of bodies and somebody crashing into it that usually goes forward for at least a yard.
Yeah. So other special teams events of note is Jake Moody hitting
52.
We can call it a Quinn Nordine 52-yarder.
A would have been. Yeah.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda. Which he'd missed both of his attempts from beyond 50 in his career so far. He's always had the leg.
Yeah, and he showed it in practice a few times, too.
Well, and he put almost every single kickoff out of bounds.
Yeah, until they, one time, late in the game, they're like, okay, fine, one time we're going to fuga to Giles Jackson and just see. And it almost looked like he was breaking free until German Green came down and got him, which worked out, but like...
And like, honestly, those kickoffs were important because Giles Jackson returning a kickoff might be Washington's best offensive weapon.
It was the one thing I'm sure every Michigan fan was most afraid of.
Yeah, that would have been lame. and then Robbins' punts, I don't think any of them are returned.
No,
they were even close to being attempted. Like, I think he had like a 55-yarder that wasn't returned. So we have this sort of old-school punt formation, and we're concerned about the fact that it's not as good at deleting punt returns as the spread punt formation, and then it doesn't matter. Because there are no punt returns, because Robbins is just skying these balls. So, as we said last week, everything from special teams is pretty much as good as can be reasonably expected. The one exception was non-Ronnie Bell punt returner, which is Caden Colosar,
yeah,
who called a fair catch, let it bounce, and then got it on the bounce, which I thought was a live ball, but they just called it dead.
Well, if you put your arm in the air, you're not allowed
to return
her, period. Yeah, even if you feel it afterwards. So at that point, it's just a fumble recovery.
And then there was another major field position switch when he failed to return. He let another punt bounce towards the end of the first half.
Yeah.
And Michigan got on like their own 15. So not great early returns. He did have a decent return where I guess where he got what was available to him, but he didn't seem particularly shifty.
No, it seems like he's out there to be the guy who can field them regularly.
But if he's not going to, I agree.
I'm the Kolesar stan of the family here, but I mean that is.
I think you are the Kolesar stan of the universe. If we really wanted,
Dr. Sapp is going to like pet. Yeah, there are people I can name, but
you're high up in the running.
I'm for our generation. I'm sure that I'm high in the
yes. Kolesar, yes. You're probably the very youngest Kolesar stan. Except for Caden, obviously, like he's probably a Kolesar stan.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I figured he was out there because he can field them, and some of the practice reports kind of suggested that, you know, whoever else is back there was having the balls clunk off their helmets, and if that's your other options, might as well just go with a safe bet. But if he's not the safe bet, yeah, the upside is not great. So
like AJ Henning isn't getting a ton of touches.
Yeah.
Nice. Donovan Edwards, maybe.
They
just need to put those guys in like a punt virtual reality simulator for the next week, and they'll go to class.
Our very visual podcast moment, as you can like. I really want to see Donovan Edwards start doing it. Maybe they don't trust freshmen or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one bummer, and it can't really, like, actually blame the coaching for that. They thought they had Ronnie Bell, and that was going to work out just fine, and bad things happen. But continually pleased with what's going on at special teams, and have been for several years now. So that's, like, the one part of the team that just was never like, rah, rah, rah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're very old-fashioned. Speaking of using the wrong punt returner, Washington does not put Giles Jackson out for their punt returns.
No, they do have, like, a hyper-athletic cornerback that they put back there, so.
Right, but that's the guy they can afford to lose even less.
Can they afford to lose Giles Jackson? They've only got four scholarship receivers.
They're all injured, but they had a whole bunch of them. But, like, I just as a fan, when that guy was back there, I was not nearly as concerned as if they had put number zero back there.
Well, I could have put Giles Jackson back there to fair catch, too, but, like.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there was one of them went super, super, super long. The guy next to me was literally reading MGO blog while that punt was in the air.
All right. Must be nice to have reception. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk to Jamie.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com, that's HOMESURE lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. all with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Jumping, and everybody's having a ball, till the fellas start the name calling, and the girls respond to the call. Hear woman shout out, who let the dogs out?
Welcome in, Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. It's good to talk to you. And hello out there to fans everywhere of teams who beat a brand Pac-12 team this weekend. Hello to all of you lovely people.
Well, very frequently on this podcast, we just sort of mentioned that Ohio State played a game.
Right,
and
right.
Quickly move on. This week, I think we might start with them. Not Oklahoma State. Oregon, 35. Ohio State, 28. And every truck driver, wrestling enthusiast, not the wrestling enthusiast, it was a bad thing, and deadbeat dad in this nation is furious at Kerry Coombs.
Well, it's not like I did not warn them. And so,
I bet so many of them are saying, we should have listened to Seth, the Michigan blogger, right, who told us that we were doomed.
True or false, Ohio State fans all read the blog.
Well, they don't read, like, the hard parts.
They learn things about Michigan just as much as, like, they do at Ohio State. They're that obsessed.
They probably put it in Google Translate.
Okay, they could have listened to the Detroit Lions as well, who were like,
English to Buckeye.
They could have listened to anybody who's drafted one of these Buckeyes and been like, who the heck is coaching these people? Because, like, that happens every single time they draft one of them, unless he's, like, transfer who played somewhere else first.
So, Ohio State didn't really have an edge, which I hear is important in football. What do you think about that, Jamie?
Yeah, they didn't have any of it. Second week in a row that they were basically overmatched and out-schemed by another team's running attack. And, you know, two different ways. Last week, Minnesota just lined up with all those offensive linemen, and they have sometimes six, seven on the field, and just built a wall and left it up to Abraham to beat a guy. And, hey, that's an NFL back. He did that a lot. Yesterday was just five offensive linemen with a lot of crackbacks from wide receivers and tight ends and a lot of untouched ducks running around either the left or right end, whichever side was the short side, which really surprised me, because you would think that with Ohio State's speed and instincts, you couldn't do stuff like that to the short side of the field. But nevertheless, that's what happened.
We should probably mention at this point that Oregon's offensive coordinator is Joe Moorhead.
Yes.
Who
should coach against Ohio State every week.
Yes, that would be, I mean, I would front a Kickstarter for that for sure.
I mean, I don't know why Joe Moorhead took the Mississippi State job, but like he could have held out for something that wasn't going to be
Starkville.
Yeah, and I think he would have been really successful. So you have Oregon going for over 260 rushing yards against Ohio State. Their quarterback puts up 236 passing yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. They spread it out. Like, there's no one receiver on Oregon who gets more than three catches. So, you know, this isn't like a situation where there is one dominant player who's just really hard to deal with. This is an offense that has a lot of good ideas about how to attack Ohio State.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, the rushing stats and CJ Verdell are the stars, but they had 11 different receivers whether they were tight ends, receivers, or running backs, 11 different pass catchers average over 10 yards a catch. And it just seemed like every time they needed a effective play in the passing game, they would make a connection. And I'd be like, oh, is that so-and-so again? I'd be like, oh, wait, no, who's that again? I mean, every time. So, and
they all had really weird
names. Many times they were open. They had two great plays in the fourth quarter to extend drives, and the last one basically clinched the game, where they just fooled them with the tight end after using the tight end all day to block. They were, you know, wide open on game clinching type plays.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that kind of jumps out is that Ohio State didn't have a sack in this game. Not a single one. And
no.
Zach Harrison, who is sort of an infamous recruiting loss at Michigan, is supposed to be like the king of everything this year, and he had just three tackles, had very little impact.
So they did not they ran a bunch of on passing downs. Like there were like a bunch of third and sixes and third and sevens where they ran and got it. Mm. And just because Moorhead just had them so completely fished that like why not, right? And
yeah.
And Verdell also is not like you normally imagine Ducks running back to be like super speedy, but he's kind of. Yeah, he's more about a thick guy. Like, they would catch up to him, and then he would, you know, stiff-arm the safety who caught up and then could keep running. So Verdell, you know, was able to get a lot of those by, you know, they got him 4 yards with the play design, and then he got the last two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the book on Cristobal's program is that it's way different than Chip Kelly and Mark Helfrich's. They don't, you know, leave you awestruck at these, you know, track stars playing football. They're built in the trenches and on physical play, and that played out almost on every Oregon drive yesterday.
The bad news is the other side of the ball still looks pretty good for Ohio State. They only put up 28 points in this game, but they put up over 600 yards of offense. You know, should be noted that Kayvon Thibodeau, who's the odds-on favorite to be the number one pick in the NFL draft, didn't play. Their second best player, whose name escapes me, also didn't play on defense. And so, you know, I think Thibodeau probably would have made a difference. But we're talking about almost 10 yards an attempt from C.J. Stroud in his second start. Three touchdowns, did throw the one bad interception at the end of the game.
I don't think he wasn't that great. It was more just he got the ball to Jackson Smith and Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, that is going to be like, so when we were talking about the cornerbacks earlier, that's kind of like,
right,
final boss.
But that's what Ohio State did to Minnesota too. They got outcoached by PJ Fleck for four quarters, and then just like, okay, let's throw the ball to Chris Olave when we're out of ideas, or Garrett Wilson, or Jackson Smith, and they can do that because that's who they have. And that's the annoying thing about Ohio State is that like it's just they can flat out talent you, even if they're just getting absolutely bombed in coaching. And Oregon had just enough talent to do it, but Oregon has, you know, built a lot of talent, and they had Joe Moorhead really kind of keeping their offense running. So I don't know if that's something Michigan can repeat unless our offense gets a lot more interesting.
Well, I mean, the thing is also this is the second week of the year.
And yeah.
So various schematic deficiencies in Ohio State's defense have been exposed and will be corrected. Remember that Virginia Tech game?
Yes.
They went double eagle and they couldn't do anything, and people were like, let's go do double eagle against Ohio State. That stopped working.
Well, you're saying Kerry Coombs is going to turn this around.
No, but they have like assistants and analysts, and they have a whole like team.
Right.
They're going to put it in the mainframe, and they're going to come back, and this is not going to be the defense that Michigan sees. So, you know, some embers of hope here, but not really.
Yeah, I mean, the game could have been quite different if Ohio State had converted some fourth downs early on. You know, the Ducks basically played a bend but don't break defense. They didn't give up big plays like the Gophers did, but Ohio State still wasted over 150 yards on offense on possessions that ended on fourth down with fourth down turnovers. In scoring position, the one drive you guys were talking about, Stroud, he had a guy open on third and seven and he missed him. Mm-hmm. And then fourth and seven play didn't have much of a chance. And then they had a fourth and two. And remember, they've shuffled their offensive line. Thayer Munford went inside to guard and he looked like a tackle playing guard on that play. And Noel Sewell beat him to the spot, tackle for loss, turnover on downs. And there was another turnover on downs in Ducks territory where Olave actually would have had first and goal, except the ball slipped through his hands. And then they, you know, incomplete on third down and incomplete on fourth down.
All right. So,
so they moved the ball all day. And maybe if one of those had converted, you know, maybe they have a touchdown where they're always even with the Ducks. But otherwise, their first four possessions in the second half, every time Ohio State got the ball, they were down 14 points. And that was fun. That was enjoyable to watch.
The other top 10 matchup of the week is Iowa 27, Iowa State 17. Iowa State has just got to wonder what do we got to do against these guys. Iowa gets outgained 2-1 in this game.
Yeah,
they have 173 yards of total offense. They put up 27 points on that. Ohio State put up 28 points on like 650 yards of offense. So, I mean, they pick off Brock Purdy three times. They force them to go to the backup.
There were glances too. Like Purdy would like hit his guy and go off his like tight end's fingers. Who? What was that guy's name? We recruited him. We thought he was gonna commit to Michigan, and he ends up going to Iowa State.
Yeah, I forget what that guy's name was, but yeah,
no, Chase Allen. So yeah, there were a couple plays like that where like you know Iowa State looked like they were running the right offense and doing the right things, and like their receiver just like bobbled the ball while he was running out of bounds, or like it flicked off someone's fingers and went to a, or they fumbled it because they're you know Chase Allen actually got whipped on this play too. They let a guy in the backfield and all of a sudden they fumble it and that they walk in with a touchdown for that. So that was kind of I thought the most of the game. Like Tyler Goodson was getting nothing against their front.
Yeah,
and then. The other part of the game was Spencer Petras like had a couple early throws, I thought. A couple of them to Charlie Jones, who was the most Iowa receiver ever.
Is he a slot receiver? Who?
A white slot receiver who's 6'0" and doesn't look like anything and wears number 16? Yes.
Okay. And he also returns punts.
Yeah. So, Iowa athlete.
Fits the mold.
I mean, and Twitter after this game was like, well, do you really want Matt Campbell? And I'm like, kinda, yeah. I mean,
or at least his defensive coordinator. I don't know. I thought McDonald did fine, but like,
you know, you gain a team 2-1, and then you lose because of some stuff that happens. And I'm kind of like, all right, you know,
some of that stuff is just horrible field position. I mean, you're not gonna see a field position difference this wide. The rest of the year, Iowa's average starting field position was the 41.8 yard line, where Iowa State's was their own 19.9 yard line.
All right.
And it was just time and time again, Iowa State was just pinned back, and Iowa's just not going to let you, you know, go down the field. We've all, you know, they're not going to let you go on 80 yard touchdown drives. We've known that, we've known that for years, but yeah, they have to find a way to gin up some offense, because in two games they look great, but they've also had three sequences where it was like, boom, boom, you have 14 points. Boom, boom, you have 10 points. So boom, 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 you have 17 points. And it sort of ended the games just like that. You know, so, you know, Wisconsin, Penn State, they might not make the same mistakes Indiana and Iowa State did. And can they get any offense going? That still remains to be seen.
So upset of the year so far is that number 10 Iowa and number 9 Iowa State still managed to play in El Asico.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's not an upset.
The best player in the game was the Iowa punter, Torrey Taylor. 51.1 yard average on 8 points, 4 50-yard bombs, 5 inside the 20. And Iowa State only had 9 return yards. So just doing some quick math in my head, that might be a 50-yard net punting advantage when he punted the ball.
Yeah, that's pretty good. The third best game of the week.
I want to know which one you're going to pick. Should I try to guess which one's the third best game of the week?
The third game between technically Power 5 teams was Rutgers-Syracuse.
Yeah.
I'm furious at Dino Babers. Because this was ruse into the third quarter.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was ruse deep into the third quarter, and everybody was getting all excited about marsupials. And then Babers takes a personal foul call after one of his players took a personal foul call. That moves the ball from the Syracuse 41, which, given the context of this game, is miles and miles and miles away from points to the 11.
Right. And yeah, then, that game was heading to 0-0 at the end of regulation until that sequence. It really was.
What could have been, Dino Babers?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know,
here's the most Rutgers stat I can come up for this game. Noah Vedral completed 22 passes for 145 yards.
Mm-hmm.
That's not
28 attempts.
That's a bad yards per attempt. As a yards per completion, it's just like, yep, that's Rutgers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're talking about his completion percentage, but like how I don't remember one play where he threw the ball past the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
I mean, he had. I mean, Pacheco could not get anything going against them. Their offensive line is just terrible. So, like, Pacheco would, like, be back there and dodge, like, the first two guys, and he would still be in the backfield because that's how many people were getting in.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting that Wisconsin-Penn State played a scoreless first half last week, and they mentioned that it was the first scoreless first half between Power 5 teams since the Moon game. And then the very next week, another Big Ten team is involved in a scoreless first half. We could be heading towards magical Big Ten season. We really could be. And this,
who you got? Who's,
you know, don't
who's next?
Don't scoff too much at this game. This was a poor man's El Asico. You know, hey, you can't afford Iowa State. Can I offer you something down lower here? Rutgers, Syracuse. It's the same.
Isn't El Asico same quality poor punning, man's El Asico?
But the ineptitude burns your throat a whole lot more.
Well, Northwestern plays Duke next week, so we could get a nude.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is another game where I think the Big Ten punter might have been the best player in it.
Oh, absolutely, Adam Korsak. Their punting advantage was better in this game than Iowa's was against Iowa State. I mean, Korsak 52.2 yards per punt. The Syracuse punter 31.5, and it just seemed like Syracuse was pinned back in their territory all game. There are some people out there who may have bet Rutgers. There are some people who may have listened to the Rutgers-Syracuse game when they drove up to Ann Arbor, and it seemed like Syracuse was always pinned back in their own territory during that whole game.
The final competitive game of the week was Miami. That, yeah. But I wanted to say Minnesota 31, Miami, not that Miami, 26. This is the first game after Ibrahim was lost for the season for the Gophers. Didn't really seem to matter because his replacement went for 180 yards on 34 carries. But the Minnesota passing game, which was previously, you know, Rashad Bateman. And,
mm-hmm.
Who's the other guy?
Yeah, Tyler Johnson a couple years ago. They Rashad Bateman last year.
Yeah,
they still had one more guy, but he wasn't quite up to them.
They had all these like RPOs that were really difficult to stop, and like Morgan completed 8 passes in this game. And this wasn't a game where it's like, you know, Minnesota is. I mean, they're doing well on the ground, but they're not like running away from this game. They're not. They're not trying to like salt it away, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And then, you know, Miami doesn't really do a whole lot.
Is Brett Gabbert Blaine's? Because I came only get to watch a little bit of the end of this one, but I noticed that they had the Gabbert at quarterback who actually was like flinging the ball and looked Blaine Gabbert esque. I was wondering if they're related.
I don't know.
I think one thing that stood out in this game is sometimes in the MAC versus Big Ten type games, you know, if like one or two plays goes one way, maybe the MAC team can stay close. Like yesterday was Nebraska UB was 14-3, and then Buffalo had 2 drives where they killed themselves on penalties. Maybe if they convert those, that game is closer. For example, you know, Ball State had to settle for like a 23 and a 25 yard field goal in the first half. What if they score touchdowns there? Maybe that game is interesting. But in this game, Miami hit all the big pass plays that they had to hit. They played a great second half, and they were down 21-3, and then it was just 21-20 because after every time they kicked it back off to Minnesota, the Gophers couldn't convert any third down passes. But, you know, and they just kept having to punt it back a couple 3-and-outs, and next thing you know, it was a close game. And then they just handed the ball off to Potts when it was back to being a close game, and they quickly got a touchdown to extend it back out to 8 points.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota actually got outgained in this game. So
yeah,
when they gave Ohio State a game last week, I'm not going to get into this.
Yeah,
I'm not going to get into this.
Here we go.
All right, and now it's time for the lightning round.
Okay.
Maryland 62, Howard 0.
That's who it was.
Oof. Indiana 56, newly FCS Idaho 14. Wisconsin 34, Eastern Michigan 7.
4 Eastern.
Yeah, I mean, they're never going to be competitive against a Wisconsin, but if they like came up against a team that was a little bit goofy.
Eastern Michigan had 92 total yards in this game, and I think they had a 98-yard interception return like late in the game. I think that's how they scored their touchdown.
So
I probably should have confirmed that before I mentioned it on the podcast, but I think that's how that went down.
You know, Graham Mertz, they went back to the kid gloves.
Mm-hmm.
So he has 14 of 16 for 141 yards. So it's like, all right, they're just trying to like build him back up after what was going on. Purdue 49, UConn 0. Do not be fooled by the fact that UConn is technically FBS competition. They are worse than probably all the teams I just talked about.
Yeah.
Youngstown State 14, Michigan State 42, whatever. Northwestern 24, Indiana State 6. I guess we could talk about the fact that you scored 24 points against Indiana State, but I don't know if we really expected any different.
No. Northwestern's terrible this year. Yeah, I mean, move on.
Northwestern, Illinois at the end of the year could be 1-10 versus 1-10.
Oh. I still pick an Illinois in that game.
You know what? I missed a game between Power 5 teams. Virginia 42, Illinois 14. Illinois started Arthur Sitkowski.
Uh-huh.
And I just don't think we have to say anything else. Illinois' defense does look to be incredibly bad at defending the pass.
The edge. No, they were just flicking it out to the edge and letting the receivers, like, you know.
They're still technically passes.
I mean, they're like screens, basically. But that was the Illinois problem. They have no edge. They still have no edge.
You have revealed to the readers that I did not actually watch any of this game.
I don't think they even imagined you were going to watch any of this game. Do you think any of them watched this game?
No, but I have responsibilities.
Virginia came out wearing purple. You'd make up anything. I was surprised by Buffalo, Nebraska. I thought
Wait. One more before
Okay.
Penn State 44, Ball State 13. All right. Nebraska, Buffalo. What do you got?
Me?
Anybody.
I believed in Mo Linguist, and I thought Buffalo was like one of the best MAC teams. And
oh my god!
I was like, "How do you?" I was not expecting that. I was expecting the opposite score, to be honest.
Do you want to know what the AP headline is for their recap of this game?
What?
Nebraska prepares for Sooners with 20.
Yeah.
Oh my god! What were they doing? Were they writing their will? Were they picking out plots?
I really thought when you got to this part of the sentence, you were going to say certain death or something. I wasn't sure.
We've taken out Buffalo, so now we can actually like fight their mascot.
They're going to be 23.5 point underdogs in that game with the Sooners right now.
That's it?
That's it, yeah.
God, I don't bet on sports, but I might bet on that one.
That's the Fox Big Noon Saturday game.
Oh my god.
They really should wear those uniforms that someone made up, and like all of a sudden everyone on Twitter believed they were real because
the
Nebraska
red ones?
Yeah.
Nobody believed those were real.
Yes, they did. Oh, people absolutely believed they were real.
You follow too many Ohio State fans.
Nah, I barely follow any. Adrian Martinez like was just better than Buffalo, and that was the story of this game.
But not a lot better.
I would say as prepared as you can be if you're Nebraska about to face Oklahoma, he is not prepared. Mm-hmm. This is like Nebraska is coming in and they're bringing their A game for the Sooners.
Do they prepare a phylactery to catch his soul?
Well, I mentioned it earlier on the podcast, but Buffalo really hurt themselves with penalties in the third quarter when it was 14-3. Their coach pulled a Dino Babers and got a personal foul. And that took them out of a drive, and then they had another drive where they'd get one play, and then the next play would be a penalty, rinse, repeat, and they matriculated a little bit down the field, but then they just, you know, obviously they couldn't overcome the down distances that the penalties got. So they were kind of there, you know.
Well, if you want to see a bludgeoning par excellence, Big Nude Saturday is your, move.
Speaking of a game that we thought was a bludgeoning, and maybe it still will be, but do you guys have any quick thoughts on the Michigan State at Miami, Florida game? I mention that because the line over the summer was Michigan State Miami of Florida minus 16, but it opened up at DraftKings only Miami minus 7. That's a huge line change. And, well, I mean, I know Michigan State scored on the first play of the game in both of their first two games, and if they do that again, okay.
Didn't Miami?
But I mean, are we paying too much attention to how Miami looked against Alabama?
Didn't they look terrible this weekend?
I mean,
they did win, and they did win a close one against Appalachian State. But who am I to say that that's a bad result, right?
Yeah, Appalachian State is actually supposed to be pretty good this year.
I mean, Michigan State has been looking good against bad teams that people mistake to be good, and I hate ripping on them because I don't believe in them, but like you throw into double coverage and Jaden Reed can just run underneath it because they've got two linebackers playing safety, and it's like, okay, go ahead, you know.
Yeah, I think people are underrating the tire fire that Northwestern is going to be this year.
Yeah.
Like, they're back to Hunter Johnson, who averaged literally 3-point-something yards an attempt 2 years ago.
So here's your noon game. It's going to be noon. Nebraska versus Northwestern.
That's the sickos game of the year.
And it'll probably be a noon game, too, so it'll be perfect.
All right, thank you, Jamie. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I'm Seth Fisher along with Brian Cook. If you really want to see some running, check in on October 16th for Army versus Wisconsin, or as I like to call it, WOOAH!